Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome back to the Daily Jungle. There's so many things to talk about today with an absolutely crazy weekend in sports, but all of that took a backseat to what happened in Las Vegas last night. So instead of giving you my takes and my thoughts on the weekend, I let you clones direct where we went today, and we spent a lot of time talking about what happened with this senseless tragedy, and I'm certainly glad we did. In addition, we did have three excellent guests. We had Jeffrey Chidiha of the NFL Network. We had Green Bay Packers star Jordy Nelson and the head football coach at Troy, Neil Brown, coming off that huge win at LSU. Because like a lot of you, I am heartbroken and I'm devastated by the news out of Las Vegas with reports that now more than 58 people have been killed, 515 injured following a shooting at a concert on the Strip. So I want to begin by saying my thoughts and prayers are with those who lost loved ones, those who were wounded, and everybody who was impacted by this last night. You see, my job is to communicate. The very definition of this show, and essentially who I am, is that I have words. You can't have a radio program without words. But at this moment, I'm not sure that I have words. I mean, truthfully, there just aren't any. Not when you read the accounts of eyewitnesses or see the videos from the event. There is nothing to say to that. There is nothing to say about that. So I want to talk about this momentarily. If there's something you want to discuss, the telephone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. If you want to follow me on Twitter and you want to communicate with me that way, you can. Follow me at Jim Rome. If you want to send an email, you can do that too. The email address is Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. I've been in Las Vegas, I don't even know how many times in my life. I mean, dozens of times. Countless times. Most of you listening probably have as well. I think we all remember the first time we went to Las Vegas. I remember being in college the first time I went. I've walked the Strip. I've been in the Mandalay Bay and the Luxor. Las Vegas has always been a special place to me. And to see it the way we're seeing it right now is a nightmare. But that's nothing compared to the nightmare for those who lost somebody last night or for those who survived last night. Even saying the phrase, thoughts and prayers, seems hollow. It seems empty now. Because it feels like something that I've said on this show so many times after so many mass shootings. And as I've said before, this is a sports show. We talk about sports here. But I've also said way too many times lately, there are a lot of things that are bigger than sports. And while sports can be a welcome distraction and an escape at times, it also seems utterly ridiculous to be talking about the Patriots' defense or the Texans' offense, at least the entire program. I mean, two things that ordinarily I would have led with. Look, it's a sports show. It is not a news show or a political talk show. But I hope you'll agree when I say this. It's also not an ignorant show. So we can't plug our ears and only talk sports no matter what, especially when something like that happens, when so many lives are lost and so many countless others are shattered. So I will do the show. We have three interviews that we've scheduled. Jeffrey Chidiha from the NFL Network is coming up in the next segment. Green Bay Packers wide receiver Jordy Nelson is in for the segment after that. And in hour number three, we've got the head football coach at Troy, Neil Brown. So essentially, we can do what you want to do. I mean, we can talk about sports, or at least I can try. We can try, but I will open it up to you. If you want to call, or you want to email, or you want to tweet the show about how you're feeling or what you're thinking, I'm open to that. Aside from the interviews, I'm not really sure how the show is going to look or feel today, because I know this, it's not a normal show. This is not a normal day. And to act like it is would be pretty foolish. You know, I want to say again, Las Vegas is a city that so many of us have been to. In fact, I'd say there was a time where I would go to Vegas 3 or 4 times a year, both for business and pleasure. I've had some of the best times of my life, professionally and personally, in Las Vegas. When I got my first big break in this business in the early 90s, I think that my boxing coverage actually helped me get some traction. We did numerous shows from Vegas prior to the biggest fights, some of our best shows, in fact, because we always had great access to fighters and trainers who were always so interesting. I once sat ringside along with Al Bernstein, and I did play-by-play for a Terry Norris-Meldrick Taylor fight. Still one of my favorite memories ever of being in this business. Boxing play-by-play on the radio. First and only time I've done that. And there's almost nothing like being in Vegas the week of a big fight. Those of you who have been there for it know exactly what I'm talking about. And then personally, there are countless couples trips and trips with the fellas that have always been legendary. So when I think of Vegas, I think of some of the best times ever. I think of some of the best times ever. So having been there so many times and having some of those best times ever, it is so hard to see it as the site of absolute horror and tragedy right now after last night. So my telephone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. Again, you should use that. Or if you want to communicate on Twitter, do that. Follow me at Jim Rome. Email address is Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. And again, I want to leave it up to you. This is going to be a little bit more open-ended. We are going to do the show that we normally do as much as we can. Again, Jeffrey Chidiha is going to come up in the next segment. We'll talk some football with him. He's an analyst for NFL Network, also writes for NFL.com. Green Bay Packers wide receiver Jordy Nelson is going to join us at 40 past hour number one. The second hour is wide open. And the head football coach at Troy, Neil Brown, will join me in hour number three. And your telephone line is open. In fact, I think I want to start with a telephone call right now. This is not a normal show, so we're not going to do it the normal way. I'll take a phone call in this segment. We go to Los Angeles. Matt in L.A. Matt, nice to have you on. How are you?
Hey, Romy. You know, I mean, I'm just praising God for my life today and thankfully that, you know, I wasn't among the people that are affected firsthand. But I just wanted to give you a shout-out, my man, for coming out the way you have. And just thanking mostly for, like, days like Friday. Like, to be honest, man, I know it's sophomoric and stuff, but we all, like, loved it. And then it just makes it so much more impressive when you come out like today. You know, you gave us what we wanted on Friday, and today you're giving America what they want, basically somewhere to just come, give thoughts and prayers, and show love to Las Vegas. Hey, man, United States strong. These punks ain't going to put nobody down. Las Vegas, you're in everybody's prayer today. Thanks, Romy. Love you, man.
All right, Matt, thank you. You know, Friday was Friday, and we had a lot of fun Friday, and that was then, and then this weekend. So I did the show Friday, and it was such an interesting show, obviously, in so many different ways. And then I got up early Saturday morning, and I flew to New York, and I did my first appearance on the NFL on CBS in New York for this football season. I'd done an appearance a couple of weeks back, but I did a live shot from Hermosa Beach. And then to fly back last night, I mean, such a great day in New York. And it was so much fun on that set, and we did the show, and I came back, and I did my prep on the airplane, and tried to get to bed relatively early, because I knew what was waiting, and then to get up and see this. I mean, it's just, it's so jarring. And as I mentioned before, for me to say again, for me to start the program off with a similar statement, that it is a sports show, but thoughts and prayers are out too. How many times have I done this now? How many times have we had a statement like this on the show? How many times have I had to say, it's a sports show, but there are some things bigger than sports? I'd love to think this is the last time I'm going to do this, but do any of us really think so? Do any of us really think so? So again, I know everybody has got a different opinion. Everybody is looking at this a different way. I'm sure some of you are thinking, Rome, can you just talk sports? Because of all these things, can you just talk sports? And the answer to that is, I might, but I also want to let you know that it would be absolutely ignorant and foolish to ignore what's going on, and that if you want to talk about that, we certainly can. And then I've got the show, and I've got the interviews that are planned. So once again, your phone number is 1-800-636-8686. Let's try one more call. I've got Jeffrey Chidiha coming up in about 10 minutes. We go to Boise, Idaho. Dustin, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How are you doing?
Good.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. I just want to thank you for being real and coming out with what's important and what needs to be talked about. And it is a tragedy, and I just have to say that, like, just touching base on what you just said, thoughts and prayers are definitely appreciated, but we need more critical thinking and action so we can prevent saying thoughts and prayers again. And most of all, I just want to say that hate is a learned thing, and love is natural. And just keep doing what you do, Jim. I love it.
All right, Dustin, thank you. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts. You know, as I mentioned, I'm heartbroken. I'm absolutely heartbroken and devastated by that news out of Las Vegas. And I think on some level, no matter where it happens, it's heartbreaking. It's devastating. Jeffrey Chidiha is my guest. We're talking about football because that's what we do, but we're doing it while at the same time being very mindful of the tragedy in Las Vegas. Jeffrey, let me ask you first about the Saints shutting out the Dolphins. The Panthers beat New England in New England, and the Rams beat Dallas in Dallas. The Texans hung 57 on the Titans, and that's only part of the list. What did you make of what you saw yesterday around the NFL?
Well, it just told me it's going to be a crazy year once again, and you never really know who's going to win, who's going to play well. I think the biggest takeaway for me from last weekend was just that, or this past weekend, was that New England being down the way they are, that this whole league is wide open. I think for so many years we've just said, well, it's going to be the Patriots and whoever the NFC puts in the Super Bowl. And right now it just feels like you could probably name about 10 teams right now that legitimately could win a championship this year.
Jeffrey Chidiha joining us. All right, so let's drill down on the Patriots for a minute. They're 2-2. But both losses have come at home. They're a Tom Brady two-minute drill away from being 1-3 on the season and 0-3 at home. How concerned are you if you're Bill Belichick at this point?
Well, I'm super concerned because a lot of this comes back to his hands. You know, it's funny when you're winning, you feel like you can get rid of people like Chandler Jones and Jamie Collins because they're making too much money or want too much money or they're not the right personality fit. But when you watch them this year, you realize that they don't have the same amount of playmakers they've had in the past in that defense. And I live in Kansas City. There was a lot of excitement here about the Chiefs went over them in week one, but I kept saying, like, that team has no pass rush. And I think you're seeing that more and more now over the last few weeks, that defensively, a lot of money they spent on the back end of that defense, but in the front seven, my God, they just can't get to the quarterback, and they cannot stop people from scoring points.
Jeffrey Chidiha is an NFL.com senior columnist, also an NFL Network on-air talent. Now, back in spring, Jeffrey, you had made the point that Deshaun Watson would play for the Texans as soon as he understood that system. At that point, did you think he'd be playing this early, and did you expect him to play this well this quickly?
Well, I was surprised that they didn't get him ready to play in training camp to be the starter. I know that Tom Savage has been there for a while, and Bill O'Brien is very loyal to people who's been in the system for a while, but you know, you draft a guy in the first round, he's going to be the quarterback of the future. You've had quarterback issues before. It made all the sense in the world that you would get him in sooner than later. I've always been a Deshaun Watson fan. I know some people talk about his ball security last year in college, but when you beat Alabama, you win a national championship, you play at the level he's played at. To me, he was the second coming of Dak Prescott. And I think so far, you know, rough start, you know, the second week of starting, but I think so far you've seen him being on that same pathway.
He was a guy that I thought very highly of, and he's a guy that I thought would have success in the league, but I really thought that he was going to have trouble yesterday going up against a defense like that, and I couldn't have missed that any worse. Now, where does that leave Houston? I mean, Jeffrey, they looked terrible in the season opener. They managed to win in week two at Cincinnati. They played well in that loss to New England, and then they did what they did yesterday to a well-thought-of Titans team. So how good are the Texans right now, and then how good can they be?
That's a great question. You know, I've always felt that if you look at what they have, you know, overall, they've got tremendous talent on defense. You've got three pass rushers, J.J. Watt, Whitney Mercilus, Jadeveon Clowney, who are Pro Bowl caliber. So you're going to play good defense. Spend a lot of money on offense, a lot of speed on the outside. They got a lot of really good weapons. It's just a matter of could the quarterback be consistent. Now, I agree with you. I like Tennessee a lot, and I saw them beat Seattle a week ago. I didn't see them hanging 57 points on that team. But if they can just be what they were, close to what they were yesterday, they're going to win the AFC South.
Jeffrey Chidiha joining us. I'm glad you mentioned Seattle. I'm really curious to get your thoughts about them because they beat up on Indy 46-18, but they got up to another slow start. So where are they as a team right now?
Well, I think there's a couple things going on there. And you know, I was at that game last week, like I said, and I really think that what happened with Donald Trump really took them out of their game. They spent a lot of time before the game trying to figure out what they were going to do, and I believe it cost them on the road. They spent almost 4 hours talking about what they were going to do before the game. But they've always had offensive line problems. They're bigger now than ever. Russell Wilson is running for his life, and that defense is starting to look like it cannot be the game changer it was week in and week out because Tennessee had a lot of big plays against them. Yeah, they got a big win over Indianapolis, but you know, they're Indianapolis. You know, I think when they start playing really good teams like Green Bay, like Tennessee, they're going to struggle.
Jeffrey, where do you think leaves Pete Carroll? For instance, he's been there since 2010, and one of the questions that came up when he made his return to the NFL was whether his approach would work on players over the long term, since unlike college, he was going to have guys for more than 4 or 5 years. Is there any concern that guys might eventually tune him out?
Well, I think he definitely is in that zone of how do you get to the next era of this team's evolution, because look, he's had a lot of players who've complained about money. He's let go of a couple players like Percy Harvin, Bruce Irvin, who weren't fitting, who were complaining behind the scenes. I think in a perfect world, this team would become more about Russell Wilson, but it's kind of weird because if it was going to be that, they probably need to do a little more with the offensive line instead of trading for guys like Sheldon Richardson in the offseason. So they're kind of stuck in a weird place right now. They're lucky they play in a weak division, but I think overall when it comes to competing for a championship, they're going to have a hard time doing that.
Jeffrey Chidiha is an NFL.com senior columnist and NFL Network on-air talent. Joins us for a couple of more moments. All right, as you mentioned, you live in Kansas City. You've got Washington at Kansas City, which means the world gets another look tonight at Kareem Hunt. This guy's been an absolute monster in the first three games. He's the first player, Jeffrey, in NFL history with a TD of at least 50 yards in each of his first three games. I know you spent some time with the team back in training camp. Is this what they expected, or are they even a little taken back by what he's done?
I think they're taken aback by what he's done. They liked his potential. Andy Reid is not the kind of coach who's going to play a lot of young running backs in his system. As it turns out, losing Spencer Ware, their starting running back in preseason to a knee injury was a sort of a godsend for them because they had to use Kareem Hunt. But look, this is a guy who Andy Reid watched in college a lot on Thursday night games when he was in his office doing game planning. He liked his versatility, liked him as a runner and a receiver, but nobody saw him being what he's become. And it may be sacrilegious to say around here, but he's already, to me, a better player than Jamaal Charles was in this offense.
Wow.
You know, he's a tougher runner, more physical. You know, he doesn't have Jamal's speed, but when you look at what he does overall, it's pretty tremendous.
Jeffrey, all of that said, as big of an impact as he's been on the offense, he's still only a rookie. There's still a notion of that rookie wall at some point in the season. Is there any concern that he might be overworked eventually?
Well, Andy's taken a lot of questions about that these past couple of weeks, and he's really made a point of trying to let people know he does have a game plan. He does understand that this is a first-year player who had ran for 5,000 yards in college. So he already has a lot of tread on his tires. But I think he's on pace for about 300 touches, you know, receiving and running the football. They have Sharkhandrick West as a backup. They want to use Tyreek Hill and DeAnthony Thomas, you know, with reverses and jet sweeps to kind of take some pressure off him. But, yeah, down the stretch, they're going to be relying on this kid because he is a closer in the fourth quarter and he is a big-time playmaker.
All right, so finally, it's a really interesting matchup tonight, Washington at Kansas City. Who do you like and why?
I like Kansas City. I think they found a way to win tough games. I think they're more like the team that played Philadelphia and the Chargers. I wanted to say San Diego, but they're in L.A. now, I know. They found ways to win tough games, and I feel like this is going to be another one of those tough games, kind of grinded out. They know what the Redskins did to the Raiders a week ago when they held Oakland 128 yards and no third down conversions. So the front seven of the Redskins is definitely something that the Chiefs are mindful of. They had a tough time dealing with the Chargers front. They had a tough time dealing with the Eagles front. If they can block those guys and do a good job, they should be able to win this game.
So it's extremely difficult to talk sports today, but it is still a sports show. So let's talk some football for a moment. I want to go back to Thursday night when the Packers beat the Bears in Lambeau. Remember, we had Jordy Nelson on in hour number one. Packers beat the Bears in Lambeau, which made sense. The Packers have Aaron Rodgers, and the Bears have Mike Glennon, who as of this morning has now lost his job to Mitchell Trubisky. So week four in the NFL felt like it was getting off to a logical and predictable start, and that could not have been further from the truth. It started yesterday morning with New Orleans shutting out Miami in London. I mean, even saying that sentence just sounds weird. Every part of that. But the weirdest thing is not that the Saints and the Dolphins were playing in England. It's that the Saints shut somebody out anywhere. The only thing predictable about that game were the, hey, guess those English fans know a thing about low-scoring games at Wembley, right? Tweets. When the Saints led 3-0 at halftime. Really fresh soccer zinger, everybody. New Orleans had been known for many things lately, but a lockdown defense is not one of them, and yet somehow they shut down the Dolphins. And speaking of New Orleans, how about the Carolina Panthers? Coming off a blowout loss to the Saints only to beat New England in New England. The Carolina Panthers, who lost to the Saints, who lost to the Patriots, just beat the Patriots in Foxborough. And in doing so, Cam Newton seemed to find 2015 Cam Newton. 316 yards, three touchdowns in the air, 44 yards, and a TD on the ground. But more than the numbers being back, most importantly, his swagger was back, and it's infectious.
Ball's at the 7, first and goal. Newton's over 300 yards passing. Here's Newton up the middle. Newton to the 1, to the goal line, touchdown!
That's what I would wait for Newton to go ahead and do.
Obviously, when he's rolling, that team is rolling. When he's confident, that team is confident. And after beating the Pats in Foxborough, you have to think they're very, very confident. The Pats, on the other hand, are one drive away from being 0-3 at home and having allowed the most points in the NFL. I mean, that's not good. In fact, that's downright bizarre. One drive away from being 0-3 at home. And the defensive legend that is Bill Belichick presiding over a defense that has allowed more points than anybody in the NFL. I mean, that's weird. I'm not going to be shoveling dirt on the Pats just yet, not 4 weeks in. In fact, I'll probably never shovel dirt on them as long as Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are there. But that defense is bad. I mean, straight up, that's a bad defense. A bad defense, and their whole vibe is just weird. Almost as weird as the Buffalo Bills going into Atlanta and beating the Falcons and claiming the lead in the AFC East, or the Pats being tied with the Jets, who went into the season like they were giving up on the season, being tied with the Jets for second in the AFC East, or Joe Flacco taking a break from complimenting Joe Flacco to give this assessment of how Joe Flacco played. Quote, I sucked.
Hey, I mean, I sucked.
I sucked. I've always said that saying something sucks is not a take. But if Joe Flacco says that Joe Flacco sucks, that's a take.
Hey,
and
I
it's
mean,
a really
I,
strong
I
one.
You know, it wasn't good.
If Joe Flacco says that Joe Flacco sucks, not only is that a take, it's a strong take and an accurate take.
Hey, I mean, I sucked. You know, it wasn't good.
Right. 235 yards and a touchdown to go along with a couple of interceptions. And that somehow felt like some crazy improvement over that 28-yard, two-pick clunker he threw in London against the Jags. But Joe Flacco saying that Joe Flacco sucked still is not as weird as Raiders punter Marquette King getting flagged for unsportsmanlike conduct. How often do you see a punter get a penalty? Period. Let alone a penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct. Or, you want bizarre, how about the Rams going on the road to beat Dallas in Dallas? Todd Gurley said the Rams were going to, quote, whoop up on the Cowboys. And they did. 35-30. Todd Gurley, 121 yards rushing. Todd Gurley, 94 yards receiving. A monster performance. The biggest total from scrimmage in his career and the most by a Ram in nearly a decade.
First down gone. Takes the handoff on the fly sweep and throws down the seam. It's caught. 35-30. Inside move. Gurley's going to go. 10-5. Touchdown, L.A. Todd Gurley did not have a receiving touchdown coming into this season. Suddenly, he's the best receiving back in the NFL. 55 yards, and the Rams take the lead.
Looks like a totally different guy. But afterwards, he played it cool. He said, quote, we didn't quite whoop up on them, but we got the win. We got the win, and it wasn't just any win. It's America's team. Everybody was watching, end quote. Everybody was watching, and he's right. That's not just any win. That's a statement. Sean McVay has something working. It's one thing to beat the Colts in L.A. It's another to beat the Niners in the Bay. But beating the Cowboys in Dallas, now that's saying something. That says Sean McVay is building something, starting with that offense. They lead the league in scoring. Think about that for a minute. The LA Rams are leading the NFL in points per game right now. They scored 35 yesterday, and it lowered their average. I've said it before, I'll say it again right now. Do you remember when Mike Martz said that hiring Sean McVay made him, quote, want to puke? Neither do I, and neither should anybody else. Couldn't be more impressive. What a great win. And they're 3-1. Great hire and a great win. And I want to talk more about the Rams. I also want to talk about Deshaun Watson and the Texans. I mean, I said it yesterday. I thought that this guy would have a little bit of trouble. I did not think that he was ready to do what he's doing already. And not against the Tennessee defense, I actually thought pretty highly of. I love the Titans going into that game. And they got hammered, 57-14. But that's the NFL. I mean, nothing makes sense right now. Nothing is going as planned. Nothing is going as predicted. It's a really strange start to the year. Jordy Nelson is our guest. You're coming off that win over Chicago, Jordy, on Thursday night. So I'm curious, what is the schedule like for you when you've got a few extra days off, and then how nice is it to have that extra time?
Our schedule was extremely nice. Coach McCarthy did a great job, of course, as a player saying this, taking care of us. We had to go in Friday morning, get a nice little workout in, and then we're off until tomorrow. So I snuck in today and got a little workout in just to kind of stay on a routine. But that's the one positive of a Thursday night game is you get the longer weekend to let the body recover and kind of get rejuvenated headed into another week.
And especially after a divisional win, that's got to feel great. So every game is special, every TD is special, but is there anything that's a little extra special when you get a couple of TD receptions against the Bears at Lambeau in prime time?
Not much. Like you said, the division games are always a little bit more special. The rivalry, being able to be a part of the rivalry between the Packers and the Bears is, again, a little bit more. So it's fun to be able to contribute to the history of the Packers organization. And it's crazy to think that we're finally even – or, no, took the lead on the Bears in the overall series. So I think it had been since the 30s or 40s that the Packers had led the series. So it's great to be a part of that game to – get Green Bay back on top, and hopefully we continue that.
That really is a wild stat. Now, that it's a win over a divisional rival, but it's a win where you had to play without both starting offensive tackles, and then you lost Ty Montgomery and Devontae Adams during the game. So what's it say about the depth of your team and the mental toughness that you were able to fight through all of that and still find a way to win?
It says a lot. I think it says a lot about our young guys, a lot about our coaching staff, how they try to develop. Those guys, even though, you know, going through training camp and maybe the first couple weeks of the season, you don't expect them to be playing, but they're still grinding on them as well and getting them prepared. And the young guys taking it upon themselves to make sure they're prepared for that one opportunity that they might get to step up and help the team. So, and I think it's going to be motivating for the other young guys that haven't had that chance yet to see, like, how quick it can happen and how you want to be prepared because you want to be successful out there and you want to help the team win. So we're proud of those guys. It's fun to watch the young guys get those opportunities to come in and play because, to be honest with you, I remember being that guy and getting, like, the spot plays here and there, and then your playing time increases and you want to be successful, and it'll only grow from there.
You have to stay ready. Green Bay wide receiver Jordy Nelson, my guest. Jordy, late in the third quarter, Chicago's Danny Trevathan hit Adams in the head after Adams caught that pass. He'd been wrapped up by another defender. What kind of thoughts did you have when you saw that develop?
I don't think I saw it too well. I saw, obviously, Devontae getting held up and then Trevathan coming in and hitting him. But I don't think, A, it happened so fast, and B, I don't think I had a good picture of it. But after seeing some still shots of it and the video post-game, it was pretty scary. Obviously, I was right there over Devontae when he was knocked out, and that's nothing you ever want to see your teammate, your brother like that, laying there motionless. So it was scary. You know, you would hope some guys would have a little bit more control over their bodies and what they're doing, that especially when a guy's being held up like that, to not take the shot at the head. So obviously the NFL has done what they've done and tried to make a stance on it. So, but Devontae's doing good. I saw him just a couple hours ago and acting himself. So that's the most important part of all of it.
That's good. But to your point, you never want to see that. But let me ask you, you did see that. What's it like seeing a teammate and a friend and a brother in that position?
It's sickening. A lot of thoughts go through your head. Obviously, first and foremost, it's about Devontae. Then you start thinking about his fiance who's sitting in the stands, his mom that's back in California that's obviously not, you know, she's watching on TV and doesn't know for sure what's happened, or trying to get a hold of people. And it takes a while to get that information relayed all the way, you know, back to her to make sure she knows that he's okay. And then you look at it, too. You start questioning why you play this game sometimes. But we know it's part of it going into it. I think they're few and far between, and we're making some changes, but it's still scary. So there's a lot that goes through a person's head in that short amount of time.
Green Bay wide receiver Jordy Nelson sharing his thoughts with us. All right, so over the summer, Aaron Rodgers was talking about the chemistry that the two of you have. And he said, quote, "We know each other on the field really well. He understands when the ball is coming out, where he needs to be in certain spots. We've done so many things in practice over the years. He's always seen the game through the quarterback's eyes. He knows timing and spacing and the second and third reactions better than anybody who's ever been here," end quote. So how would you describe the chemistry from a receiver standpoint? Does it feel like the two of you can practically read each other's mind at this point?
Sometimes it seems that way. It's a good thing. It's taken a lot of time, like you said, a lot of communication. I think I put more credit to the meeting rooms and the communicating more than the practice field, because I think that's where it comes first, and then we'll carry it over to the practice field and obviously into the games. But it's trying to understand the game the way he understands it, and just kind of just somehow getting there. It's been 10 years getting there, a lot of hours together, but it's been well worth the time, and it's continuing to grow. We were having conversations Thursday night about things and what they're doing on defense and what we're trying to do on offense, and if we go back to a certain play to be ready for this. So it's just constant communication, and that way when it does happen, you're ready for it.
See, that's fascinating to me. I mean, after all that time, and as you point out, it's not just on the practice field, it's also in the meeting room. I mean, we're talking about literally thousands of hours and years and years and years. How can it get better? How do you find another level, and then how do you continue to improve upon that level?
You just continue to grind at it. It's everything. Something's different every game. If it's a different coverage, we can run the same concept, the same play over and over, but you constantly see a different coverage or different leverage, or teams will eventually try to take it away, so you try to be one step ahead of that. And it's just thinking. And like I said, trying to be one step ahead or make that adjustment. I can have multiple examples flash through my head of where we've tweaked the line a little bit. If it's sitting instead of breaking out, if it's being quicker instead of, you know, maybe going to the full depth if they play a certain coverage. So they might have stopped it the first time, but then the next time we come back to it, if we get the same look, we want to capitalize on it.
Jordy, before you go, let me ask you about the season opener against Seattle. I'm going to ask you about the 500th catch of your career. Now, you might say to me, when my career is over, maybe I'll look back, or I'm not focused on that, I'm focused on the team. And I believe that. I believe both those things. But still, that's a huge number, a huge number. Could you take 1 second and reflect upon that? What's that number 500 mean to you?
It means a lot. I think you did take the words out of my mouth about how I said wait until after the season or after my career to look back on it. But it is crazy to see where we've gone in 10 years, 9 years. But to be able to sit back and reflect of all the people, and I'm not just talking about the people here in Green Bay of coaches and players, but all the way back at K-State and high school that have poured into me and allowed me to be successful and be the player I am today, the person I am today. So all of that is fun to look forward to celebrating with them at the end of all of it. To be a part of Packer history, like I said earlier, is amazing and extremely humbling just because of the great history that it does have. It's a good number to hit, and hopefully we can get some more on there.
You had a touchdown that game, which was the first game that your middle child, Brooks, had attended. So what did it mean to have him there and then to have a TD in that game?
It's fun. We've started taking our two older boys to the games this year. They've been getting more interested in it, figuring out what, you know, daddy does for a living and this and that. So it's been fun to take them, for them to hopefully make some memories, and because it's not going to last forever. It's not like I'll be doing the same job when they're, you know, 10, 15, 20 years old. So you try to get as many memories as possible now that they can hold on to. So it was exciting. I kept the football, gave it to them. So both my boys have a football now from the games they've been at, and I've had them score a touchdown in those games. So I think the key is to continue to bring them so I keep scoring touchdowns.
I think that's great. And do they have an idea now of who you are and what you do for a living, or to them are you just dad?
A little bit of both. My oldest, who's in second grade now, he definitely understands that I play football for a living and play for the Packers. And the younger one, who'll be three at the end of December, he gets a little bit. He knows I'm on TV and stuff like that, but I don't think, obviously, being three, he doesn't understand everything. I think he just understands the basics that I play football. I'm on TV, play for the Packers. He loves going to the stadium. Anytime we drive by it, he wants to go into it. and check out the stadium. So it's fun. It always lights their day up when they see the stadium, want to go in and hang out.
Hey, Jordy, it's probably pretty cool to them that you're on TV, but wait until you make it on YouTube. Then you'll be the biggest thing ever to them. That'll be huge.
Right, exactly.
Listen, last thought, you had your
charity. It's a whole different world, especially from when we were that age.
It's incredible, right? Listen, really quick, you had your charity softball tournament back in June. It benefits Young Life. Am I correct in assuming this? Did you take Clay Matthews deep? And then how many home runs did you hit in that game?
Definitely took Clay Matthews deep. I don't know how many home runs, maybe three or four. The offense, we play offense versus defense. We dominate pretty much every year as an offense, so they've been trying to get it to change up. But it's a fun event. The fans out here in Green Bay, Wisconsin, love it. We packed the stadium full at one of the minor league stadiums in Appleton. So it's fun to do. It's fun to get away from football and show the fans kind of our personality a little bit.
I got to tell you something. There was nothing more jaw-dropping, at least in terms of numbers, than this. Houston, 57. Tennessee, 14. 57. They dropped a Heinz bottle on Tennessee. 57 points. You take away a pick six, and the Texans offense had 50 against one of the nastiest, most physical defenses in the NFL. And Deshaun Watson had 5 TDs. 4 through the air, 1 on the ground. 5 TDs tied the NFL rookie touchdown record. He also threw for 283 yards, and he did all of that in his first home start of his career. All of which inspires the following question. Who the hell is Tom Savage? And how the hell did that guy ever get the start ahead of Deshaun Watson back in week one? Now, I know I wasn't saying this necessarily yesterday before the game, but I am now. Based on what we've seen from Watson in the last 2 weeks, Tom Savage must have been Tom Brady to keep Watson on the bench to start that year. My man Savage must have been carving up the Texans defense in camp because Watson is doing the same to actual defenses in the regular season. And it's clear this is not the same Deshaun Watson who was playing in camp. But don't take it from me. I wasn't there. Ask wideout DeAndre Hopkins. Hopkins said this about Watson, quote, "He's maturing more and more every day, not just on the field, but off the field. He's doing things that are characteristics of a quarterback that wants to win everything, the ultimate goal. The way he carries himself, not just on the field, but off the field. The leadership mentality he has. Just the adjustments that he can make on the field, going on the sideline, going out and correcting it. I haven't had that in a while." End quote. You know why, DeAndre? You know why you have not had that in a while? Because nobody has ever seen that kind of improvement. At least not in a while. I mean, if this guy really was not good enough to beat out Tom freaking Savage in camp, and he's lighting up the Titans only a few weeks later, this guy is improving at lightning speed. I would say that this is the same Texans team that got humiliated by the Jags in week one, but they clearly aren't. It's mostly the same players. It is the same season, but this is not the same team. Watson has changed not only the production, but the mindset of the entire group. As Hopkins also points out, the way we practice, the way we go about things every day, not just on the field, but off the field. Our mindset is we're going to score every time we touch the ball or it's a disappointment. End quote. So the team that couldn't get out of its own way against Jacksonville is now disappointed when they don't score. This was a team that was built with its defense. Now its defense can't even get on the field. Jadeveon Clowney didn't even know what to do with himself. Quote, "We usually play in a lot of snaps on defense, but this game, we didn't get to play too many snaps. I think I was on the sidelines, like hollering at the coach one time, like, man, I'm not on the field enough." He was like, "Nobody's on the field now," end quote. J.J. Watt was even confused. J.J. Watt said, quote, "It makes life a lot easier. It's a beautiful thing to watch. It's nice to be able to sit back on the bench and just watch the offense move the ball down the field. I'm very excited to obviously be able to put up a performance like that. If they want to score 57 every week, that's fine by me. I'll take it." End quote. Thing is, they look like they could. The Texans had the ball for nearly 40 minutes yesterday, and that was against a smash-mouth ball control team. Of course, the game got out of control early, and the Titans lost Marcus Mariota, but that was not supposed to happen. You were not supposed to score nearly 60 on the Titans or have the ball for 40 minutes against them either. And you definitely are not supposed to do that with a rookie quarterback making his first home start. But the Texans did, and Deshaun Watson did. And if they can do that against that team, what can't they do? What can't they do? This cat is electric.
Second and goal at the 8. Shotgun, 7-step drop, edge, collapse. Flip out, open back, Miller. Unhit into the end zone, standing near right, touchdown. The dump to the running back gets his second score of the day. The blowout is on in Houston, 43-14, destroying the Titans with 11:19 to go in the fourth quarter.
Deshaun Watson on fire.
And who's this guy doing it against, too? This guy is lighting it up against some defensive gurus. Look at his last four starts. Look what he did against the likes of Nick Saban, Marvin Lewis, Bill Belichick, and Dick LeBeau. Put up crazy numbers against all of them. This guy, look what he's done in his last two starts, his second and third starts and first home start. I mean, I am shocked that he did that last night. Now you know why Dabo was comparing him to MJ, Michael Jordan. He might be. But old Deshaun, well, Deshaun's not, as you might imagine, knowing Deshaun Watson, he is not sweating any of it.
He's a fun guy to coach. I mean,
I just keep it simple, and I just make sure I take it one play at a time, one step at a time, and learn as much as I can from the coaches and the veteran guys.
Hey, Alvin, just keep it simple. When asked for the Deshaun Watson cut, just play the Deshaun Watson cut. Just keep it simple. Don't overthink this thing. Like when I say to you, when Deshaun Watson, he's not sweating any of it, don't think, I wonder if he wants me to play Bill O'Brien talking about Deshaun Watson. Dude, we really are playing checkers here, not chess. Alvin, I know you're smarter than me and all of us, but don't overthink this. Dude, it was like one mistake. I've made one mistake in 10 years. Can you get off my ass? Yeah, I can. Just having fun with you, little guy. Take it easy. Just dude, having dude. A little fun, dude. What's fun to you is not fun to the rest of us, all right? Your idea of fun. And I'll tell you something else, Van Smack. This little bit that you do where you pretend to be me and you have this two-way conversation, not fun either. Also dude, not fun, dude. Van Smack. It might have been fun back in 2004 when you started it, but last dude, I looked dude. At the calendar, it was 2017. All right, now, if you want to make sure that I'm still on board for your funny little interviews for your podcast that you got a little bit later on today, maybe you just get back to work. You got it, bro. Take it easy, Alvy. Take it easy. Deshaun Watson looks incredible. Neil Brown. Neil, it's so good to have you on. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well, man. I appreciate you. Appreciate you having me on. Yeah, I've listened to you for a long time, man. You got me through a lot of recruiting trips, so I appreciate it.
Neil, I appreciate you saying that. That means a lot to me, and I couldn't wait to talk to you today. Look, we're a couple of days out from that monster win over LSU on Saturday. I know you're thinking about South Alabama, but Neil, can you take a moment and just talk about this? What is life like for Neil Brown and Troy football right now?
Well, it's a lot of fun. The good thing about us is we don't play till a week from Wednesday. So it's in a normal game week where we're getting right back at it. Gave the staff and the players off yesterday. We're just going to meet today. We're not going to practice. And we'll put this game to rest by the end of the day today and then get back to work on South Alabama moving forward on Tuesday. So the schedule allows us to enjoy this victory. Winning's so hard. And I don't care what level you're at in any sport. Winning is hard. And I'm not a guy that says, hey, you just move on to what's next. You need to take a minute and enjoy it and appreciate the achievement. We'll do that yesterday. We did that yesterday. We'll do that today. And then we'll move on and worry about getting back to our conference games. But, you know, the only thing that's different really is we had several more people at our press conference that I just completed. We've got several more national media requests, which I appreciate. It's great for our university. It's great for our community. This is a significant win. This was a fluke win. We've played football here for a long time and been highly successful. We've come close on this type of stage numerous times, whether it was LSU, Florida State, last year against national championship champion Clemson. So to finally get over the hump and win that game in a place like LSU against one of the name brand opponents was huge.
Well, man, you're good. You hit on about six things that I wanted to hit on. I'm going to get to those things in a minute, but I do want to say this. I rarely do this. Neil Brown's our guest. I rarely do this, but I want to play a piece of the sound for you from the locker room after the game. This is when you spoke to the players.
So it takes Champion to come on the road. This is the toughest venue as there is. All right? This is the toughest venue, man. And we did so many good things. I'm serious, man. We just beat LSU!
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you've won some huge games and you've been right there with the best of the best. But what were you feeling in that moment? And then how good does it feel to be in that locker room surrounded by your players and to yell, "We just beat LSU"?
Well, that's fun. You know, I say this a lot, but if you can bottle up that feeling, okay, of accomplishing a huge task and being in that locker room after a significant win, if you could bottle that up and sell it, you know, we'd all make a bunch of money, because there's no better feeling out there than that, having that sense of accomplishment. And what you didn't see is I usually get the guys excited after we win, but I was physically and mentally drained after that game. And I'd actually finished talking to the team, and one of the guys said, "Is that all you got? Is that all you got?" And so I thought about it for a minute, and I forgot the TV cameras in there. Obviously, you can tell that I'd done some yelling in that game when my voice cracked. I didn't get to LSU before my voice cracked. My daughters have been giving me a hard time about that.
Great. I think that's great also that you see you're hearing it from them. And what your guy says, "Is that all you've got?" You know, on top of that, but this point is really important. It's not a fluke. This is not a fluke in that you didn't just start playing football this season. This is a proud program that has won national titles, has beaten teams like Mississippi State in the past, gave Clemson all they could handle last season. But what does a statement win like that mean to you and the program, even despite that success you've had?
Well, we're a proud football program. And we've won three national championships. We've had a lot of success at the Division I level since becoming FBS in 2004. We won five conference championships from 2006 to 2010. Not a lot of schools have done that. You know, USC has done it right off top of my mind. I'm not sure who else has done that. But we haven't gotten the national respect or national recognition like some other group of five schools have, and we feel like that we've accomplished just as much as a lot of our fellow group of five schools, and we've knocked on that door. We've come really, really close a lot of times. We've had some high quality wins. We beat Mississippi State on the road. We beat Missouri when they were nationally ranked here at home. Beat Oklahoma State when they were they were just outside the top 25, I believe, in 2007. But we've had a lot of close calls, and we felt like that. For us to get the national respect that we felt like our program deserved, we had to have one of these milestone wins. And to do that, you have to go on the road, because we're not getting the blue blood programs to come in here. And we've had so many close calls. Last year at Clemson, you know, was the most recent. And for us to go do that and win at that venue is huge for our program. Here's the other thing, Jim, too, is like this – well, I say it wasn't a fluke. You know, we didn't run one trick play. There was no gimmicks used on offense or special teams. You know, we played big boy football. We lined it up. We ran the football. We played great defense. We were solid special teams. And that's how we won the game. You know, we didn't do anything special. New schemes defensively. We just lined up, played football, and won the game.
I think this is a key point, and I'm glad you made that point. You're right. There was nothing gimmicky about that. There was no fluke. It's not just that you beat LSU. You led the entire way. Your defense forced four turnovers. You rushed for more than 200 yards. So you not only beat them, but you dominated them, and you did so in their house. Now, Neil, before you go, I want to talk to you about your background. You played your college ball at Kentucky for Hal Mumme when he had assistants like Tony Franklin and Mike Leach when they were doing some pretty radical things on offense. You could have gone other places, but you chose to walk on at Kentucky. What was it about that offense that got your attention?
Well, I grew up in Kentucky, and I was a fan of the Wildcats. And at that time, my senior football season, 1997, my freshman year at Kentucky was 98, and we actually had a walk-off win at LSU in 1998, Seth Hansen, that was Tim Couch's. Seth Hansen hit a field goal. Tim Couch, that was his last year at Kentucky. And I thought about that team and that moment a lot this past week. But not only Hal Mumme was the play caller and the head coach, Mike Leach was my receiver coach as a freshman. Tony Franklin was a running backs coach. Chris Hatcher, who's the head coach at Samford, He was on the staff as a GA. Sonny Dykes, former head coach at Cal Berkeley. He was the other offensive GA. Guy Morris, who was head coach at Kentucky and Baylor, was the offensive line coach on that staff. So just a tremendous amount of offensive coaching talent there. And, you know, and that offense was so different in 97, 98. And, you know, other than Coach Spurrier, nobody else was really throwing the football. And I was a receiver, had a great high school career. I was a very average college receiver. But I learned so much football there during that period of time. I was around some extraordinary coaches.
Yeah, but as a player, that was not the end of your career. I mean, you finished your college career, and then you went to play arena ball for the Lexington Horsemen. Got asked.
You did your homework. Somebody in your group did some homework.
Always. What was the experience like? I've got to know what it was like to play arena ball for Lexington.
Yeah, well, Tony Franklin was the head coach there, and my primary reason for playing arena league was I knew that I was not going to go play in the NFL. I was trying to put off the real world as long as possible.
Right.
I was trying to put off the real world as long as possible. But it was a lot of guys I played with in Kentucky. We had a lot of fun.
Neil Brown, my guest. Neil, before you go, from the outside, I think two things are very clear about your program. Number one, you don't blink. You didn't blink against LSU. So let me ask you, is there an ability, this ability not to blink, is it something you can coach into players, or is it something you have to recruit?
Well, I think it's both. When you take over a program, you know, I'm the firm believer is when you take over a program, those are your guys. There's not the guys that we recruited, the guys that were here previously. No, everybody in the program is your guys. You know, I thought Urban Meyer made a really good point a couple weeks back. He said, I chose you. You know, and that's the way we've always talked to our kids here. And so we really try to ingrain that. And then we try to – our evaluation in recruiting is not just how fast, how big, how strong. It's can he be a good teammate? Does he have competitive character? Because those are huge, those are critical points. You know, we want guys that have competitive character. We also want guys that are going to be great teammates. And the other thing, too, is we're looking for guys that play the game with an edge. And our guys over the years have played the game with an edge, and we were zero intimidated going into that environment. Our guys, we're not sitting here. I'm going to go into team meeting in about an hour, and I won't stand in front of a group that's surprised or shocked. They expected to go in and play well, and they did that.
Let's go to Las Vegas, where we have an affiliate there, CBS Sports Radio, Las Vegas, 1140 AM. Alisa is in Las Vegas. Alisa, good morning.
Well,
how are you?
Hi, good morning, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure.
I'm a Lyft driver here in Vegas, and the past couple of days I've been shuttling people back and forth to this festival. And so it really hit hard because the last two couples that I took last night and dropped off, I took them to the festival. And it was, you know, I had a great conversation with them in the car. They were laughing. They were excited to be going. And now I'm sitting here wondering, did they make it out? Are they okay? So I appreciate you, you know, acknowledging that this happened and not just letting it go to sports this morning. So thank you for that. And again, thanks for taking my call.
Alisa, thank you for making that telephone call. I'm very sorry. I'm very, very sorry. Let's try Calgary. Grant in Calgary. Nice to have you, Grant. How are you?
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me on the Vine here. Listen, all of our condolences from up here in Canada go down to all of our brothers and sisters down in the United States of America.
Sure.
And, yeah, I couldn't believe it, Jim. I'm sitting here waiting to get on the line with you. I had a friend text me, and her son-in-law's friend is in intensive care in Vegas. She was one of the ones shot. So, and this is real. So I just want to pass on all that. I want to talk about my Bills, you know, Bills Nation up here in the north. Wanted to talk about how McDermott reminds me so much of young Marv Levy, the whole nine yards, Jim. But, you know, these things have got to stop. And so I'll call back some other time and rant about my Bills. But God bless America. God bless the people out there. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Grant, very much. Grant in Calgary. Let's go this time to Toronto. Bruce in Toronto. Bruce, good morning. How are you?
A little shook up. First of all, this is what makes your show special is when you go outside the lines and let people do and say what they want to say. I listen to you every day. It's the first time I've ever called. But the main thing is the thoughts and prayers go out with everybody that was there last night. And what shakes me up is my wife and I planned on going, and we we changed our mind and decided that we're going to go to Nashville next summer instead. And we were both unbelievably shook up.
So you were going to go to Las Vegas?
I don't know what else to say other than best of prayers to everybody that's out there. And thanks again for what you do, Romy.
All right, Bruce, thank you. So I'm going to interpret that to mean that he was going to go to the event. He and his wife were going to go to that concert, but decided to wait and see it instead in Nashville. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it very much, and I appreciate you. Check back tomorrow for Podcast Tuesday, the Daily Jungle, and the Jim Rome podcast dropping with Trailblazer star Damian Lillard and writer, director, producer, and the creator of Billions, Brian Koppelman. It figures to be a great one. See you then. I'm out.